Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Thriving Marriage Podcast. My name is Mark Johnston, of course, and with me is my lovely wife, Jennifer.
Hello.
This week, we are going to be discussing how to have a fulfilling marriage and get your own needs met within that marriage. I'd like you to watch till the end because, you know, I just get this feeling that some of you may be looking at this and thinking, okay, somewhere in here, it's my marriage not feeling fulfilling. It's my partner's fault. We want to kind of explain that situation, what to do about it, and how to understand this a bit better. But before we get to that, we always have a client win of the week. This one is an anonymous win, but this person goes on and says, he is talking this weekend. It's a little bit, but for a man who does not like to talk about feelings, it's still a win. We laughed while talking. He talked. And even though he reminded me of my shortcomings, he is talking. And we talked through a lot of those complaints. This person goes on to say his attorney called even and wondered if her husband was feeling unsure that he even wanted a divorce, which is really promising. So I wanted to share this because it might not look 100% like a win, but we are getting progress in here, and that is still a victory, as in this person is talking, opening up about their feelings, and we're getting some doubts about the divorce process, which is all what we would expect as things are getting better. So great win.
Yeah. Good job, N.
N. That's all it says on the
client N.
So this previous week, we did put a post into the Facebook group. We always like to connect all of you to what's going on with some of these podcasts. So the post was asking, put out a question of sorts. It says, finish this sentence. To have a thriving marriage, I need to blank. And we got a bunch of comments on here. A lot of people are talking about being selfless, having open communication, feeling safe and accepted. Now, I'm noticing a lot of these, you know, I'm hearing communications a lot, listening, acceptance, and forgiving. But a lot of these have some themes to it. A lot of these actually have a very specific connection, and we want to talk about this connection that is kind of underlying a lot of your answers here. We're going to get to that in a bit and like what creates a fulfilling marriage and how do we get to that, but we need to build it up a little bit first, I suppose. So why don't we actually talk about this a bit? So Jen, what makes for fulfilling marriage?
When we think about the aspects of fulfilling marriage, we might think about the pillars of a healthy relationship, and those are fulfillment, feedback, intimacy, positive regard, commitment.
Mm-hmm. These are some of the things that like we kind of discuss here with High Thrive. I know I've spoken to you about some of these things. I think you've talked to me about some of these pillars that we have within within this organization. Like this is a good place to start with, you know, what creates a fulfilling, you know, a good, happy, healthy.
Right. And you marriage. Want all of them, but you'll notice, you know, because everybody's slightly different as a personality. Maybe some of them feel like they're more, you know, top priority rather than, you know, others. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, we did mention like one of the pillars was just fulfillment. And we're saying, okay, how do you have a fulfilling marriage? You need fulfillment. Oh, great answer, Mark. Great. But when we are talking about this, we do mean like a specific thing. I always equate this to, the woman's name is Madonna's, right? Chloe
Madonna's of Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
It's the woman behind the curtain of Tony Robbins. Yep.
At least that's our suspicion. I highly suspect.
Well, wonderful. He's wonderful. She definitely supports his, the work that he does and has some good things.
Yeah, Madonna's, she has this kind of idea that there are six basic emotional needs. And our contention here is that if you're going to have a fulfilling, you know, like if you're going to check that box for a fulfilling relationship, that these needs should be supported within that relationship. And just quick rundown, these are needs for connection, certainty. She lists it as uncertainty, as in like fun, variety, challenge, significance, contribution, and growth. Her idea here is if you have these needs met, things are pretty good. And within a relationship, this is going to be a strong relationship if these needs are all supported within that relationship. But I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we could look at it. I mean, we could look at other kind of ideas or theories. I mean, can you think of any others that really contribute to like...
Well, when I start thinking about emotional basic needs, it reminds me of the love languages that John Gottman talks about.
It's not Gottman.
Who is it?
Oh, it's...
Love languages.
It's another big name, and I should remember. I should remember the name. It is Gary Chapman.
Yay, Gary Chapman.
We couldn't attribute everything to Gottman. Gottman does a lot of stuff. But yes, love languages is a good.
And that's how we give and receive love. And so a lot of times, even though we might be aware that our partner has a certain type of language, we're going to, like, without thinking, being on autopilot, give them the way that we like to receive.
Sure. Like other... A lot of people have these ideas on how do you have a fulfilling relationship. But Gottman, speaking of Gottman, Gottman has his own thing. He says, here's this sound relationship house. And he has kind of a formula for like what's needed in a good, happy, fulfilling relationship. And he talks about like love maps and turning to each other and having trust. He has a certain prescription there as well. Other people might say, okay, you need to match with the right kind of personality. You could look at personality types and relationship styles, conflict resolution. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that could contribute to a sense of fulfillment within a relationship.
And these are the lenses that you can look at that. And maybe there's one that we mentioned that you've heard about, or you'd like to go look it up because there's no wrong lens to look through this at.
I don't know. I always, maybe it's just kind of the business that we're in. I always kind of find it fun to look at different ways to look at these things. But the kind of the point is, I mean, I just listed off, you know, something like five or six different ideas on how to have like a good, happy, fulfilling relationship. This, if you're trying to figure things out and trying to piece back your relationship or trying to fix it, I get the kind of sense that this can kind of feel a little bit confusing or daunting to kind of know, okay, what's going to work? How should I look at this? How should I approach having a happy or healthy relationship? Mm-hmm. I think a good question to start is like, why do relationships feel so fulfilling in the first place, especially in like those early stages? Just perhaps different stages, but I don't know. What do you think? Like, why do relationships feel fulfilling
initially?
Sure. Let's start there.
Sure. So when you're starting out in a relationship, it's probably really exciting because you're finding new ways to connect and you're learning about each other and you're being constantly rewarded as you grow closer. And so it feels like there's a sense of progress. There's a sense of contribution. Like all these things we mentioned are just built in to the basic beginnings of a relationship automatically. Mm-hmm. And very little adjustment is needed to be made during these early phases because most of these interactions are meaningful and rewarding. So it's interesting just to note for your, you know, personal self that it doesn't mean that your long-term relationship is bad because it didn't feel like the beginning. We're just being aware.
Yeah. There are certain, I tell people this all the time. I think there are certain easier aspects of a relationship in early stages. And I actually think that there are certain easier pieces of a relationship in a long-term later on in the relationship.
Right. Like you'll probably have more certainty later on and you'll have more things that are naturally stabilizing the relationship and keeping it together, whether it's a house you own together or children.
Let's take a look at this for a second. You remember our earlier stages when we were dating, right? Like things were pretty different back then.
Yeah. I mean, like we both had separate lives to some extent, going to school, working, and then we come together just for the fun and enjoyment of each other. So that makes it quite easy since the challenging aspects are usually outside of the relationship.
Yeah. We'd have like a lot of like late evening. We were in like a student apartment building. We'd like go and hang out at the communal hot tub in the evening during the winter, like,
or take walks. It was just like really relaxing to be together.
It was really rewarding. I can remember it being very exciting.
Yeah.
Kind of like, even like remembering back to like our first date, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put my arm around Jen. Is she going to reciprocate? Is this going to be okay? And like, just all that little excitement, mm-hmm. as Jen would lean into me or respond with a kiss. Like, yeah. Because these things were new, and there was a ton of like, is she going to accept it? Does she feel the same way? Mm-hmm. This sort of thing is very, very rewarding. Mm-hmm. Contrast this to like now.
Well, contrast this to now. It's funny because sometimes something will happen, a small thing, and I'll know exactly what Mark is going to say. I'm like, this is the moment where he breaks out in the song and he sings this little, little line from this, like the song, like at this moment, because it fits, or he's going to quote this movie here. Like, it's funny. We do tend to like read each other's minds a bit, which can be fun, but you could also say, oh, it is a little too predictable on occasion, but it's fine because you can find ways to like make it, you know, add some variety, add some new adventures. So
absolutely. Like, I feel like the marriage is very fulfilling. Less so, I'm just going to admit, like, we're a little bit less exciting, but the relationship has a lot of depth. And when we are looking for that excitement, Jen and I can have a, you know, yeah. we can talk and we can come up with some excitement when we
want. Less exciting in the way that we have five children, so you have to plan the excitement.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure everyone here is aware of how that goes with having lots of responsibilities.
Sure. So why do long-term relationships sometimes become less fulfilling? That's it, because that's how I see it. Like, if people are having this question, like, how do I have a fulfilling marriage? I'm going to assume that these are people who have a more long-term established relationship.
Probably.
And they're looking for that fulfillment. And so I'm just making the assumption for all of you out there, you know, if you're asking this question, I'm going to say, okay, you're in a long-term relationship and you're wondering why it doesn't feel as good as it used to. So I don't know. What are our thoughts here?
Well, often the relationship trades the uncertainty that we just mentioned. Will you accept this new part of relationship, you know, to growth and for the more certainty and more connection and belonging. So you shift from like, what will happen here, to I know what's going to happen, but I feel safe, but now I have less excitement and less maybe growth opportunities.
I'm struggling to remember the author's name. Actually, it was a client recently that was just telling me about a book. It was talking a lot about this, and I'm going to butcher this idea just as a caveat for all of you, but it was, the basic idea was that it's impossible for long-term established relationships to be passionate without a little bit of like danger. Like, you were saying, like, those two things, certainty and safety, are incongruent with passion.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I completely agree with that idea, but the idea was put out there.
Mm-hmm.
But this is essentially what tends to happen. It's trading some needs for other needs. Now, I'm not going to say this is a total loss in needs. I think that this is like a natural shift that tends to happen in more established relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to even say that this is the only problem, that it's like, okay, it's become less exciting, more predictable. That's not it. Like, we talked a little bit last week about how communication can break down and cause the relationship. We talk about all that. But I do think that this is the linking factor, like the key idea. So if you're listening in, this is the moment to actually pay attention. The whole thing here is that needs shift with an individual within the relationship, and the relationship doesn't adapt to those needs.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever it happens to be, the long-term relationship, when it becomes less fulfilling, is it's that. It's somewhere people change, an individual shifts a little bit, and the relationship doesn't adapt to those needs. And if we went back to last week, we were talking about Knapp's relationship model. And I've talked to you about that, right? Yeah. And we were saying, okay, like at some point there is something shifts, something changes. For Knapp, this would be the differentiation stage. Right. And the main problem, that the thing that Knapp puts out there, is she says, okay, the differentiation stage, this point where someone wants to do something different, isn't handled well. And then the relationship tends to descend from there.
Yeah. And every relationship will face this. It's a very common problem. Like, who knows why people change, but they do. Like, their interests change, their jobs change, mm-hmm. their family situations may change a bit. And yeah, there is some need for acceptance within that.
Can I bring in our conversation from earlier today?
Sure. I didn't even know the podcast was going to be on this. And I was actually thinking that I wouldn't mind bringing this real life circumstance to the listeners so that they can understand that even within a healthy relationship, what does it look like when change needs to happen? And this differentiation is happening, and how is that handled? Mm-hmm. And just the bumps of that, because it's not always smooth. It's okay. And just like having the understanding of, we're going through some shifts, and it's going to feel a little bit interesting as we smooth, like, you know, try to smooth this out. And just like having that bigger arcing view that this is how it's going to be.
Yeah. So basically, Jen and I have been experiencing just some shifts, as Jen is being focusing a little bit more on work than she has in previous years. And this is something, you know, we've had to smooth over a little bit. To be clear, Jen and I have had a lot of conversations around this. I want to support her and being a little more focused on her work. Great. But it has created a lot of change, and there's been a little bit of tension around that. And so this is what I'm talking about, is that some needs shift within the within an individual. And if a relationship doesn't adapt, then we have a situation where it's going to feel less fulfilling. Now,
right.
we were just commenting earlier today, where you're saying, isn't it great that we're kind of recognizing that this is what's going on, mm-hmm. and that we can
adjust. We recognize the phase when it showed up, and we're able to say, oh, we're here at this time in this map. Mm-hmm. And we can see how, if we handled it in a certain way, if we both kind of handled it in a way that was, you know, acting out of stress and not our best, I could see how it could lead to separation down the road.
It could have.
If I wanted to make some job changes and you were unhappy with that, and there was some pushback, it could feel like, for someone like me that needs growth and contribution, like feeling like I'm pulled back into who I used to be, mm-hmm. for your comfort, could feel sad for me. But no. You know, you're being very accepting, but at the same time, I'm recognizing that it is hard, because new responsibilities are added to you, mm-hmm. as the shift happens. Like, I might be in a phone call, and now you have to go pick up the children from school, and you're not used to that. So, yes. So that's where that comes in. It's just, the grace to go through that together.
Yeah. So this is expected, and any relationship that has any sort of length, you know, that's well established, that's going to be together a long time, these shifts are to be expected. So the big question here then is, knowing this, if what leads, what creates this lack of fulfillment is shifting needs without adaptation, how do you have a fulfilling marriage and get your needs met? Which, hey, is the title of the podcast. So where should we start with this, Jen?
Well, you got to know yourself, like know your partner, and build communication on that. So, you know, you're self-aware, and you're understanding like what their needs are, so that you can continue to kind of figure out ways to meet them within the adaptable environment.
So yeah, you were saying you got to know yourself, know your partner, got to build some communication. And I think that's it's a great place to start. And you'd be surprised. I get a lot of people that come in and talk to me, and I start asking about, like, okay, well, what's needed and what are people wanting? And some people have no idea, which is interesting.
It's fair. It could be hard to like really put that into words.
Other people are very certain. They say this is what my partner's saying. It's this thing. And almost always, even in those situations, there's all this stuff kind of underlying this that is not really being communicated well, and isn't really understood well. And now what I would say, you know, if I had to relate this to some ideas, you know, this goes back to Gottman and Gottman's Sound Relationship House. One of his foundational pieces on this, he describes it as building love maps. He might not, you know, you might include some other pieces of the Sound Relationship House about turning towards each other and whatnot.
And what is the love map? I thought that was an interesting concept. We were discussing that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Give an example of that, perhaps.
Yeah. Honestly, like when I first came across this, I was like, oh, great, Gottman, build love maps. What is that? It is a lot about knowing each other, exactly what we were just saying, knowing yourself, knowing your partner, knowing what interests them, know their communication styles. It's about knowing what, you know, they appreciate for fun. It's basically about actually having some conversation and understanding what makes it easy for there to be love within a relationship, whether that's conflict, fun, communication, you know, like, and how everyone approaches those things. But yeah, like a big factor here is kind of having some understanding first. You know, we might discuss this in terms of some other things if we had to bring in another idea. So like within High Thrive, we talk about those healthy relationship pillars. This would have a lot to do with, are things fulfilling, meeting those basic emotional needs, and is there good feedback? I do think that those two ideas are really key in making sure that, you know, things are fulfilling. As an example, you know, like I said, Jen and I have been having these discussions a lot recently, and we've been recognizing, hey, it's not enough that I don't present any obstacles to you
That's not support, being an obstacle. So you're just making that, it's not like, oh, I'll step out of your way so you can make the phone calls. Or it's more like, oh, I'm appreciative of who you are and these changes you're making. And I want to tell you that I'm your cheerleader, your biggest cheerleader.
It's about, you know, for what I would be saying is in terms of fulfillment and having a fulfilling relationship is, are these needs, like you said, are these needs being supported?
Mm-hmm.
Am I actively engaged in, you know, in your needs being met? And do you feel like I'm engaged or interested or invested in that, and vice versa?
Right.
So yeah, like a lot of these questions are about that. Like, do you actually know what you want from your relationship? Or are you simply presenting solutions on how you get what you want? Like, once again, Jen and I have had to have this conversation, and I might say, hey, look, I really want you to spend some time with me this evening. And it's actually became a lot easier to have that discussion when we talked about why that would be important,
right?
How I was feeling, how Jen was feeling around those requests.
And then we were talking about, like, you know, that support. Well, if you want time this evening, can you support me while I do the work that I might've had to do this evening? Mm-hmm. So just like lots of communication, like you almost can do, I mean, communication, you can't go wrong. Just double down on it if you're going through one of these big changes.
Yeah. So do you know what you want? And is it not just the specific ask, but why? Does your spouse know what they want? We've been talking about that a lot here. And or are they simply presenting some solutions on how they can get what they want? Do they understand the underlying reasons and the underlying needs? Because there is, would you agree, there's a big difference between discussing specific solutions, specific requests, and discussing actual needs. Right? Yes. Okay. Do you have an ability to discuss those needs? I think that's a huge issue. If you're looking for how to have a fulfilling marriage, can you talk about it? This is why we were just saying, you know, in terms of our healthy, happy relationship pillars, like those needs and then the feedback is really important. I think for Jen and I, it would be detrimental if we couldn't discuss this.
Right, right. This differentiation that we're going through would just lead to deterioration and separation eventually if it left went unchecked. And you don't want to get to that point. And if you are, you want to reassess and go back to some of these things we've mentioned and make sure they're solid.
Yeah. A few other questions to consider. Do you have an ability to create compromise? Do you have enough fondness for each other to make sacrifices and really lean into supporting each other's needs? I mean, these are all things. It's basically comes down to those two things. Are you aware of what the needs are? Can you talk about it? Can you support each other in those right. needs? And that's really what it comes down to. How do you have a fulfilling marriage? How do you get your own needs met? It's those skills surrounding discussing these needs. So do we have anything else that we want to add into this?
I like your example of what our love maps look like. Just so you know, make your own. You know, we brainstormed about this, and Mark needs to be calm. Like he needs calm, like a calm atmosphere, lots of connection on like one-on-one. And then some structure. Like he needs to know what to expect a little bit more than I do. And so I have to be aware of that. And there has to be some give there. And then I like adventure, a sense of purpose, and lots of growth. So I need to be allowed avenues of that, so it doesn't feel stifling and boring. So like we said, like, and sometimes these needs clash because, you know, a sense of purpose and growth can look a little bit chaotic for someone that likes calm. So that's something we constantly, that's a dynamic that we plan, and that's okay.
Yeah. So I hope this was helpful in kind of giving an idea. Of course, if you need support in kind of navigating this area, knowing how to talk about it. Of course, we have lots of podcasts, a lot of information on how to communicate a little bit more in depth with your spouse. But of course, we also have, of course, we have our own services. So if you want some support, please go to our website, www.highthrivecoaching.com/apply for a free evaluation. Now, we always have a little bit of time for our marriage myth buster. This week's myth, monogamy means dissipating passion or boring sex. We even like talked about that briefly, or long-term monogamy is going to eventually lead to a boring relationship. I mean, if the myth is out there, we've heard that, right? We talked about it today. We were saying, hey, long-term relationships can be a little bit less fulfilling, right? We've all heard that. Is that accurate?
Well, so the fact is new relationships simply have the advantage of being more exciting, but also fact, long-term relationships have their advantage because they're deep and they're stabilizing, they're connecting. And also another fact, a stable, deep relationship does not have to be boring. If having an exciting relationship is important to either one of you, then it's important to communicate around those needs that would make it exciting and have variety and fun and growth. Do it.
So this myth is grounded in some things that actually do happen, as in it is, like Jen said, it long-term relationships do have some advantages of stability and connection and depth, but it is a little bit more challenging or takes a little bit more effort to have that passion and excitement. But it is absolutely, you have the ability to do that. It depends on how much effort you want to put into it. My observation is that a lot of couples who say that they don't have a lot of passion within their relationship anymore, it's because that there's this assumption that it should just happen automatically or naturally, because it did happen naturally at some other point. And so they say, because it doesn't happen naturally or automatically, it must not exist. And I'm going to, and so almost always when I'm hearing that complaint and I'm going through like my evaluation, my assessment, I'm saying, okay, well, how much time are you spending together? Are you actually talking about what you're looking for in a relationship? Are you, is there an ability to make requests and bids? Like, and a lot of times, a lot of these things have blocks or obstacles, like the communication has broken down, or they've stopped spending time together, or other responsibilities have taken more of a front seat.
Yeah.
Meaning there are very clear solutions to creating more passion or excitement within a marriage, if that's desired. And that's just, I don't know how to state it more as a fact, because I see it happen over and over again that it's possible.
Right.
So if you like this, if you, you know, want more information on, you know, videos just like this, please go over to our YouTube channel. You can subscribe over there. We come out with content just about every week, and we are always excited to hear what you would like to hear from us. So please comment, please subscribe, please let us know what you would like to hear. We do pay attention to the comments and we incorporate that into future material. So next week we are going to be talking about some exciting things. I'm going to be honest and I'm going to say that I don't have that information right here. So I guess we'll just have to see when we come out with next week's video. We usually have a preview, but just going to say not this week. Sorry. So I will hope to see you all there next week. And thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.